Okay. Let me double check one more time. Mr. Wallace, did you join? Right. Mr. Romano, if we want to go ahead and get started, I've got a couple of messages out to Mr. Wallace, but we do have a quorum.
All right, well, let's jump in. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. The 1-26-2023 meeting of the Arizona State Board for Private Post-Secondary Education is called to order at 10:02 a.m. The board may go into executive session for the purposes of obtaining legal advice pursuant to ARS 38431.0383 on any matter on the agenda. And the board also reserves the right to change the order of the agenda items with exception of hearings. Mr. LaMountain, are there any changes to the agenda today?
Mr. Romano, there are no changes.
Thank you very much. Would you please take a roll of the board, roll call, and staff?
Dr. Leck.
Here.
Dr. Leck is here. Mr. Romano?
Present.
Mr. Romano is present. Mr. Ball?
Present.
Mr. Ball is present. Mr. Wallace? Yet to join. And Ms. Cardullo?
Present.
Ms. Cardullo is present. I'm present. Kevin LaMountain, Executive Director. Keith Blanchard?
I'm present.
Keith is present. Jacqueline Rome?
I'm present.
Jacqueline is present. And Seamus Monahan?
Present.
Good. Roll call is complete.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. LaMountain. Are there any declarations of conflict of interest that need to be brought forward at this time? Hearing none, we will go ahead and move forward. I don't believe you need to take a roll on that piece, Mr. LaMountain. So we'll keep moving forward to agenda item number four in regards to the previous meeting minutes. The audio recording of the 12-8 meeting should have been posted on the website. As a reminder, the State Board policy for the recording of minutes is to audio record all meetings and post them to the website. Mr. LaMountain, can you please confirm that the audio minutes for the 12-8 meeting have been posted and are audible?
Mr. Romano, I can confirm that they have been posted and are audible.
Thank you very much. Do I have a motion to accept those minutes?
Motion. Dr. Leck.
Thank you, Dr. Leck. And a second? Well, I'll go ahead and second that to keep us moving along.
For roll call, Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Has Mr. Wallace joined? Still absent. And Ms. Cardullo?
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By your vote of four ayes, one absent, so that motion passes.
All right, let's check the box on item number four and move to item number five. This is the review, discussion, and possible action on election of board officers, both the board chairperson and also the vice chair. My understanding is the staff has had conversations with Dr. Mittman, who is our current chair right now, who's unable to attend the meeting, that he is open to continuing his position as chair of the board. And I have also communicated that I am open to continuing as the vice chair of the board, but I want to open it up to the board, see if there's any discussion or if any board member would like to make a motion.
This is Susan. I'd love to make a motion to retain Dr. Mittman as chair and Mike Romano as vice chair.
Thank you, Ms. Cardullo. Do I have a second on that?
And I just want to make sure, this is Assistant Attorney General Seamus, I just want to make sure that nobody else wants to nominate anybody else if we're going to vote just to retain the current officers, just to make sure nobody else wants to nominate another person. All right. Thank you.
Dr. Leckel, second.
We have a motion and we have a second. Any conversation, discussion? Hearing none.
Oh, yes. I was just going to thank them for their continued service. I appreciate it.
Great. Dr. Leck.
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace, have you joined? Mr. Wallace is still absent. And Ms. Cardullo?
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By your vote of four ayes, no nays, no abstention, one absent, that motion passes.
Very good. Thank you, Board, for your continued confidence in both Dr. Mittman and myself and leading us forward from that standpoint. And I look forward to next year where we may be able to mix it up a little bit and get some stretch opportunities there. So thank you. All right. We will also, I think, push the committee discussions. And by that, I mean, if there's any changes to the committees, we'll address that at the next meeting with Dr. Mittman there as chair. So just as awareness from that standpoint. Mr. Lamont, if you would, please move us to item number six on the agenda, the review and discussion of the executive director's report.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Romano, and members of the board. I've provided some information in your folder regarding our financial reviews and then my report. So just briefly on the report, in terms of our operating budget for this fiscal year, we're halfway through the fiscal year, and through the first half of the year, we are still at a positive in operating account. Our current ending fund balance is just under $300,000 at $299,057. Our revenues are a bit over our expenses and exactly where we planned in terms of our fiscal 23 budget. For the second account that we have, which is our student recovery fund, as of today, that ending fund balance is $539,885.32, which is still above the $500,000 minimum that we should have in there. That will, as we've discussed in previous reports, that will go below the $500,000. Sometime in February, March, and that would be then the requirement that we get to July of this year, that we will come back before the board and ask to bill for what we believe would be the last time in quite some time to bill for the student tuition recovery fund. So it's just for the schools that are listening and for the board's information, budget purposes, it is highly likely that we will bill in 2023 for the student tuition recovery fund. Moving on, school closures. I have provided a list of those that have closed through the current part of the fiscal year. There was one addition that happened early this week, which was the American Home Inspectors Training Institute. That facility has decided to teach everything online out of their facility out of state. So there will be no physical presence in Arizona, so they no longer need licensure.
Pardon me, Ms. Sorry, Ms. Your audio broke up for me. I apologize. Could you just repeat that last statement?
Yeah, so that the institution, so the American Home Inspectors Training Institute is, they will continue to teach in Arizona only online though, so they will not have physical presence, so they do not need and they do not require licensure in the state. Moving on, you see the dashboard shows that we are currently at 233 institutions that are licensed by the board, and it'll also show that we have about 15 pending applications, three that have been submitted, one that is going before the board today. And then our February meeting, we will have, it is anticipated, we'll have two or three new schools that will come before the board then. No additional information under schools in Teach Out. Obviously, we'll have a conversation with Aspen University today regarding their pre-licensure nursing program. I provided a list of schools that are on HCM1. We do not currently have any institutions that are on HCM2 at this point in time. Accreditation, a number of accreditation visits are anticipated in February and March. I will be going to one on Monday, Mr. Blanchard attended one last week, so we are becoming very active in attending accreditation visits as we move forward. Under legislative update, we do have a new policy advisor. Her name is Erin Hart. I met with her this week on Monday. It was a very good discussion. So it was our first entry into the new administration. I've had a great conversation with her, and they're very supportive of our board and some of the opportunities that we have moving forward to review both our upcoming sunset review and our upcoming potential rules changes that we may need to put in place over the next few years to align our rules with the statutes. I just wanted to let you know we're following what's going on in the legislature. There's really nothing that impacts our board. There is something that I think that schools might want to take a look at, and that would be SB 1182, which is the Arizona Promise Program. There is a bill. That bill would include private post-secondary institutions as part of that, which in the past has not was not a component. So we'll see how that goes as it goes through. But it would be worth watching for those institutions that have degree-granting capability, that it might be something there as a opportunity for students. And lastly, we are in the midst of we're in the midst of changing our software system out. So the software that we use, which is Salesforce, and that our schools use for renewal programs and the renewal process, their applications, their initial applications. Working with a company that has been very frustrating, I've spent quite a bit of time back and forth with Asset, ADOA, and making it really clear that we're not overly enthusiastic about where we are. We're about 8 months behind where we were supposed to be, and that is very concerning to me. And I have a meeting scheduled for next week with Asset to talk about the potential to move away from the standard platform that every state, or that the state of Arizona wants us to use, and move to a different platform. We have to be out of our Salesforce no later than December 31 of this year. So it's been somewhat of a, it's going to be a challenge to get us through it, but we'll make it. So, and that is the end of my report.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Lamont. Board, are there any questions? We appreciate Mr. Lamont's thorough, detailed reports that he provides us in the files, and you do such a great job. I'm not surprised there are not any questions as a result of that. So thank you for that. All right, we will move to agenda number 7 for us, which is the review and discussion regarding Aspen University's quarterly reports to the board. Discussion to include, but not limited to, the status of the nursing pre-licensure program teach out and compliance with ACPPSE board agreement. Mr. Lamont, are you able to give us kind of a high level, and then we'll get started here?
I provided, well, thank you. The institution, Aspen University, has provided quite a bit of information to the board. I put that into your folder that will, they have been actively providing us information on a monthly basis, both student records and updates on the teach out. So all that information is in there. And I know that there's a number of representatives from Aspen University on the line today.
Thank you, Dr. St. Arnold. It looks like you are on as well. Is there anyone else from your team that is on today that you introduce?
Yes, there is. Good morning, and thank you for inviting us to come before you today in connection with our monthly update under the stipulated agreement. Joining me today is Aspen's VP of Finance, Mr. Michael LaMontagne, who's been with Aspen for about a year and has experience in higher education finance, and he can provide answers to questions the board may have about Aspen's finances. As you know, in September of last year, Aspen entered into a consent agreement with the Arizona Board of Nursing to complete a teach-out of its pre-licensure program. Board staff reviewed our teach-out plan for the pre-licensure program at the end of October of 2022. 425 active students remain in Phoenix, and they all will be taught out within this year. Aspen is committed to doing whatever it takes to support its students through the Teach Out. Before entering the consent agreement, Aspen had received recommendations from a consultant. Aspen has implemented a number of these recommendations and taken several proactive steps to promote student success in the Teach Out program process and to prepare them for success beyond graduation. A few of those actions are worth highlighting today. First, we made curricular revisions to increase the rigor in our program through the implementation of midterms and finals in most didactic courses. Second, we've invested significant fiscal resources to purchase and implement the Kaplan Review Program and a fully integrated Kaplan course, both of which are providing additional support for students and NCLEX preparation. Third, we've expanded our Elsevier contract to include many shadow health modules, which have been added to the curriculum. And fourth, we've secured over 90 clinical affiliates to meet the demand for clinical placements post-COVID, and as a result, have been successful in placing students timely and appropriately. We believe these steps are having a positive impact and will assist Aspen in educating students prepared to address the nursing shortage in Arizona. I have analyzed internal qualitative data on each of the students left in the Teach Out to ensure our students are using internal resources to improve their readiness of the NCLEX program. We do so to know when they used our Kaplan program and what their Kaplan scores are, and when they worked with our NCLEX coaches and how they measured up to our criteria for being prepared to take the NCLEX exam. Our analysis of those who graduated in 2022 indicates that those who have taken full advantage of the Kaplan program and respond to our coaching both prior and post-graduation pass the NCLEX the first time at a very high rate. To get a sense of how our students feel about their education they are receiving, I've also reviewed the student end of program survey results for the last 2 years, comparing 2021 to 2022. Every program category increased year over year. For example, this coursework helped me prepare for the workforce. In 2021, it was an 86%. In 2022, it was a 95%. And we had over 252 students responding. We have a very high response rate. With respect to the core program, I have reviewed every student end of course aggregated survey data for every course in 2022. These survey results reflect a broad swath of our student population in the pre-licensure program with hundreds of results for every single course. The data showed 80% or above satisfaction rate from students for every prompt in every course. In addition to analyzing internal data, we've also reviewed external quantitative information that could shed light on student learning from a third-party perspective. For example, there's a HESI predictive indicator report. It's a new report by cohort that indicates a predictive indicator based on individual current student performance thus far on HESI exams that they've taken and other data from Elsevier's Evolve system. This report demonstrates how likely students are to test well on the HESI exit exam and subsequently how likely they are to pass the NCLEX. The results of the HESI report suggest that our remaining students should make significant strides in their NCLEX pass rates, well over 80% by cohort this spring. The HESI report also provides insight into individual students' strengths and weaknesses, which is being used by our nursing faculty and NCLEX coaches to identify specific strategies for intervention on a student-by-student basis. Aspen's also retained another independent consultant to evaluate our Teach Out program. The independent consultant is a team chair for CCNE site visits, has experience on the CCNE Standards Committee, as well as the Budget and Review Committee. To date, the consultant has completed an initial report, which has been submitted to the Board of Nursing. This initial 13-page report covers her review of the program structure, curriculum, faculty roles, staffing model, policies, the student handbook, and academic catalog, and the Aspen website. The consultant has begun interviewing our students and faculty and will be providing a supplemental report. Aspen will implement any recommendations the consultant should make. We will share with the Board of Nursing the consultant's supplemental report. On a forward-looking basis, we have students graduating in February and April of this year who have job offers already. Our graduates are readily employed by major hospitals and other healthcare providers in Arizona and in other states. Our students have reported job offers in level one trauma centers, adult general and specialty ICUs such as neonatal and cardiovascular, and post-anesthesia care units, as well as the Mayo Clinic and other local healthcare providers. I'm an evidence-based decision maker, and I believe the learning evidenced by both our review of internal and external data, along with a positive report from an independent consultant, speaks to the excellent progress the program is making in providing a quality of education to our students. Next, I would like Mr. LaMontagne to speak about our financials. Michael?
Thank you, Sherry. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, members of the board. As Sherry said, my name is Michael LaMontagne and am the Vice President of Finance for Aspen University. I've been with the organization now for just a little over a year, and it is my pleasure today to be able to communicate the financial position of Aspen University, representing 8 months of this fiscal year 2023, ending December 31st. We have provided you guys with financials through that date, and I just want to highlight a few of the items that I think are pretty important to the discussion, and then I'm available and open to any questions you might have after that. New enrollments and student population have generated $28.7 million in revenue for this fiscal year to date, which is a nice significant amount of money. The operating income that was generated from those that revenue was $1.9 million. The one thing I wanted to say was the company, as well as Aspen University, has implemented a restructuring plan, including a reduction in staff, as well as a marketing reduction to take us back to more of a maintenance spend. And then we also have a pre-licensure ROI teach-out plan in place that is representative in our forecast. With all of that said, the organization, Aspen University, is healthy, is doing well, and with the parent company restructuring that we have made, the parent company is going to be close to a break-even point moving forward. The other point I wanted to make, I know this was a point of clarification for the board, was the cash position ending December 31st. It was reported at $912,000. As stated, this is the lowest point of the year for our cash. As representative of, as of January 18th, cash for Aspen University was reported at $1.5 million. And we'll continue to improve as we get into the fourth quarter. It's a much stronger seasonally fourth quarter in cash receipts, as well as the savings opportunities we've implemented with our restructuring within Aspen University's parent company. So with that said, I'm going to stop talking, and if there's any questions, I'm open to that.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael. And he's referencing our fiscal fourth quarter, which is May 1 through April 30th. So anyway, thank you for allowing us to come and provide a monthly report, and we're both open to any questions you might have.
Thank you very much for that detailed report. We appreciate it. I have a couple questions. My fellow board members may have a couple as well. We understand this is really a quarterly report at this time, and that there are other activities going on with the Board of Nursing and that you're continuing to work through. And so we're just trying to stay close to all of that at this point in time. Is there any new information that you haven't shared up until this point that you would like to share this morning?
We are precluded from discussing any in any public setting the substance of any ongoing matters with the Board of Nursing, so the answer would be no at this time.
Understood. Thank you. Just wanted to ask that question. In regards to some of the adjustments from the finance standpoint to break even, to get to that point of breaking even as we move forward. You had mentioned some adjustments in staff and what that looks like. Can you help provide a little color on how you'll balance that based on previous student concerns in regards to having the support staff that are necessary to ensure that they're receiving the education they need to be successful?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Oh, go ahead, Sherry. Sorry.
Well, first, I just want to say the restructuring had to do around enrollment with the drop in marketing spend and enrollment. We have not touched our academic services for our students in any way.
Okay. That's helpful. And I know we've touched upon this in the past, and it was shared at that point, moving on from this licensure, going through the teach out really wouldn't have any financial impact on the organization as a whole. But I just wanted to come back around that, as it seems as though it's maybe a little more dicey than what was originally anticipated, but maybe not. I'm certainly not an expert in that area, but I guess I'd ask for the school, if you could, how do you see this really impacting your financials moving forward?
Okay, Sherry, you okay if I answer that? Okay.
Yes. That's what I think. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ramon. Yeah, we have a financial model built out over the next 3-year period as the teach out moves forward. And as one would anticipate, you know, there's revenue associated with the number of students that we have now. And as the teach out occurs, the we have fixed and variable costs. So the fixed costs that we have, those will remain in place, the facilities, et cetera. And as the teach out and the population continues to graduate, it'll have a greater impact on the organization. We have an opportunity to potentially resolve those fixed costs moving forward with subletting, et cetera, of some of the space. But that's the main cost. Instructional staff and et cetera would decline as the population graduated. So I don't see a significant impact to the overall business, but we have an opportunity with the facilities that remain in place.
Thank you for that. Appreciate it. I believe we have, Mr. LaMountain had some complaints that have come forward over the last couple months to the board from students at this time. I believe the school has had a chance to respond to those. And our intent is to review those at the upcoming complaints committee. Is that accurate, or
Mr. Ramon and members of the board? Yes, there are some that will be. We will continue to review. We will be doing, and I will announce now, and the institution will get a formal notice that we will be doing a site visit in the upcoming weeks. To review the content of those and to review with faculty and students some of the progress that's been reported. I have expressed that desire to do that with Mr. Garner, who is their legal counsel that I work with. So this is not new news.
Right. And Mr. LaMountain, thank you. I appreciate your being willing to come to the campus and speak with our students and faculty. And I also thank you for the opportunity to respond to any concerns or complaints that you may receive from students. Thank you.
Fellow board members, any additional questions for this update?
Mrs. Doug, I have a couple questions.
Please.
On the balance sheet for Aspen, I see where the accounts receivable has gone down about $4 million, but the allowance account went up. Did something happen in your collection department that caused that to happen?
Yeah, nothing in particular. It was more of an analysis of what we were writing off and adjusted the reserve requirement to be at a more reasonable level to where our write-offs were occurring.
Okay. I noticed in the notes that you're in the process of factoring your receivables or selling them, or can you talk a little bit about that?
You know, I can mention what it is that that is public information. There is a desire to get an accounts receivable facility, but not to sell the receivables. It was more to be able to finance a revolving debt against that to generate more capital.
The receivables would be like secured for a new debt instrument.
That's correct.
Okay. Well, board members, I see that their current ratio is still good. Net income is down quite a bit, but compared to the same period prior year.
Right.
It went from what, $4.2 million down to $1.8 million.
Correct. But I would say the instructional costs, have remained flat, actually declined just a little bit. You know, it's predominantly from the facilities of the pre-licensure that we have. As that revenue has declined, those facility costs remain. Those are fixed costs that will continue to sit there.
Right. The change just seemed to be in a drop in the revenue.
Yeah, and predominantly in the revenue. But the G&A has gone up as a percentage of revenue due to the facilities. Okay.
I don't have any other questions.
Thank you, Ms. Ball. Any other board members, any questions? Mr. Lamont, based on your timing of your visit and that review, do you anticipate bringing Aspen back for the February board meeting, or do you anticipate that to be further in the year?
Mr. Romano, members of the board, as we have not been there yet and started that process, I can't commit to a report being completed by the February 23rd board meeting. We do have another meeting. The next meeting after that would actually be in April, which would be due, their quarterly report to us would be due in April as well. So I don't want to make a commitment at this point in time, but we'll keep the board informed, Mr. Garner informed, Ms. Dr. Arnold informed, and all of those at Aspen.
Thank you for that. I just wanted to kind of set everybody's expectations that this may not be an immediate turnaround, but may take a little bit of time, but we'll start to engage in that nature. Okay. Well, given fellow board members have no additional questions, we appreciate Aspen's time today and the update that you've provided. And we will look forward to seeing you, if not in February, in the April timeframe again.
Thank you so
Thanks,
much.
Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank
Bye-bye. You. All right. With that, we will proceed to agenda item 8 of the review, discussion, and possible action on the following pending license applications. I believe the first one we have up is for the conditional to provisional license renewal of Purpose Institute with our board lead of Dr. Leck. So Dr. Leck, I'll turn it over to you or to Mr. LaMountain with any type of update that may be relevant first.
At this point, there's nothing, no new documents have been added since I sent the information out to the board.
Thank you, guys. Would someone from Purpose Institute like to make an opening statement?
Hello, Dr. Leck. How are you doing? Nice to see you again. This is Dr. Derek Drakeford. I think it's been about a year since we talked. Purpose Institute is just grateful for this opportunity. We're grateful. We're honored. We feel a tremendous sense of responsibility. Just the way that you go about your work, all that you do. Our mission is that every student that comes through has the rigor that stands up to your reputation and what you have built in Arizona. So this past year, we've hired 5 new faculty, and we've begun to build e-courses and technology courses. We've also acquired a new provost, who served 7 years as a principal in Louisiana and has a PhD in education from LSU, Dr. London Moore. She's on the video right now. And real quickly, Dr. Moore, if you could just say hello to the team. Dr. Moore is really leading our academic programs now.
Sure, Dr. Drake Ruth, thank you. Good morning, good afternoon to each of you. It's lovely to be here. It's been nice to just kind of hear how you all have been running the meeting and learn a little bit more. Like Dr. Drakeford said, I joined the team last year and had the pleasure of working with each of our professors who are from a variety of places around the US. We've just been building a lot of the curriculum out and starting to work with the recruitment of students and that piece. So I'm just excited to be in the room and understand the process that you all have gone through here to get to this place. And so just thank you for having me today.
And last, before you go again, Doc, I also want to introduce Miko Lau, who has been doing our registrar work, our back office with students. And Miko, if you could just say hello to the team.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for allowing us to be here. It's nice to meet all of you.
All right. Well, thank you all for that. It's nice to see you back. Dr. Drakeford, I think you know that I happen just to be a pretty detailed person. So the things that we're looking at are going to be very specific that I have questions of. And then I will turn it over to my fellow board members if they have any. But I want to start with your website. So when you go to your website, you have the name Purpose Institute up there. You also have the name Purpose University up there. And your email, your website is something different. And so I want to clarify what your name is, because it probably should only be one, right? Versus two different things. So can you give me an update on maybe why that's happening?
I think that's a really great question. So we were founded in 2006 under the name Purpose University. So that's how we've been operating since 2016. That's how we've been operating for 5 years. When we began our application process in Arizona, we were informed by Keith, who really has helped us out with the application, that in order to use the name university in Arizona, you have to have a graduate level program. So in Arizona, we had to change our doing business name as Purpose Institute. But the legal name with the IRS is still Purpose University. So I agree that's a challenge and that's a hurdle. What's your advice on that?
Oh, that's beyond my scope. I'd say you have to work with board staff on that, because my concern is it looks very, I'll go with Keith. It just looks misleading, right?
So, Keith. And Keith, I just want to make sure that, you know, we're not giving any advice right now. You know, if you can help them later, that's fine. I just want to make sure that, you know, we're not advising them on what they should and shouldn't be putting on there.
Yeah, it wasn't advice, but the rule states that to use the word university, you have to be degree granting and accredited, I believe. Is that right, Kevin? I think we had a rule change about 5 or 6 years ago. So the older schools that were here before that, they were grandfathered in. Everybody else, it was changed that you had to be an accredited degree granting institution to use the word university. Most of the institutions change your name to college or whatever, like institute, until that happens. So that, I just wanted to get a clarification as well. Thank you.
Okay, well, I think that's gotta be addressed somehow. Anyway, I think last time you were here, you stated that you were starting the accreditation process and that you were doing that with DEAC. It looks like, has there been any activity there, and can you give us an update on what that is?
Yes, we have started the process. We started the application process. I've met twice with their executive director, Dr. Leah Matthews. She actually has us doing some work for DEAC training for all the colleges on diversity and inclusion. So we've developed a really good relationship. It's still in the process of applying. One of their stipulations is that we have to track our students for a year. before we can officially apply. So we're still in that process of tracking.
Okay, and for the good of the group, how many students do you currently have?
So in our non-degree program, we have 1,318 students. In our new program, which is our degree program, which is maybe about 8 months old now, we don't have any students yet. So we're building the curriculum and we're building the courses. We're doing some virtual reality courses, which take a little more time to develop. We're taking pictures around the state of Arizona at different parks and different scenery. Within the student will have an Oculus and the course will be virtual reality. They'll be at that location in Arizona.
Okay, so forgive me. You have 1,300 in non-degree, but I don't see any of that on your website or in your catalog or anything. I never got that impression. Am I missing something?
Dr. Leck, for our purposes, for this board's purposes, the purpose only has one degree program that is in under license. So whatever they're doing elsewhere doesn't fall under their license in Arizona.
Okay, thank you, sir. That's very helpful. Didn't make sure I wasn't missing something. Okay, so then let's talk a little bit about your website. So pretty much nothing works. Every link that you click on sends you right back to the same page. So when you click on learn more, I'm still on the same page I was just on. I can't get anything to work. I don't know if it's just me, but I can't get the catalog. I couldn't get the catalog that way. Nothing is clicking.
Listen, that's my apologies. I will talk with the web guy to make sure that everything is working. Whatever information, again, this is the first that I've heard this. Whatever information that you need in addition to catalog and questions, we will get it to you ASAP. But I'm learning this right now from you, so we're going to get to the tech people and get that updated ASAP.
Okay, well, and there's some more things that I'd like to kind of talk through that I've noticed from the website that got me looking at different things. So some places in your materials, we're seeing different titles. So sometimes you list it as social enterprise and sometimes you list it as social entrepreneurship, and you're going to want to make sure that you use what the exact title is that's approved by AZPPSE and not, you know, substitute them. And so sometimes I know that happens with people who don't understand the significance of it or trying to do search terms, but you need to stick with the one that AZPPSE has approved. Another question I had, there's a statement on there, and so then I decided I didn't quite understand maybe what the model is. So there's a statement on your website that says advisors are paired with students to personally guide them through their courses and serve as their mentor to help them build a thriving business. I did not understand. Are advisors also the faculty? Are they the same people or are they different people? So that's confusing then.
That's a great question. Dr. Moore is over that part of our academics. You want to elaborate on that, Doc?
Yeah, absolutely. So many of the courses students will be taking are asynchronous. They are paired with a faculty member who would serve as their advisor as they go through the coursework. Part of their coursework does help them build out their business. So we want them to make sure they have somebody who they have a lot of contact with while they're moving through the courses. But I think that's really helpful feedback, right? To say that that piece feels confusing to someone who hasn't spoken to someone from Purpose Universe or Purpose Institute. So I actually really appreciate that feedback. I think it's helpful.
Okay, no problem. Because can you explain to me then, and I have questions later on, but can you explain to me how your courses work then? So are you is that advisor like the traditional academic where I have a faculty and I'm teaching and I have so many students that are assigned? So you don't separate out those duties between people who help do the administrative stuff versus the faculty stuff?
Yeah, exactly. So like I, for example, would have a like 10 or so students who I would serve as their advisor for as they're going through choosing their courses, deciding how they want to move forward with their business, having a lot of much more access to me than they might have to the person who
is running their particular course.
Okay. So, yeah, so I would clarify that with, because then right after that, you say all-purpose university advisors. So now you've got faculty with advice, you have faculty, you have advisors, now you have university advisors, whether they are the same people or not. So consistency would be there. And then that led me to, when I was trying to figure out the answer to my question, I went to meet the faculty, and that doesn't work on the website either. So I couldn't dig through the materials on the website. I had to try and go back to what was submitted to the AZPPSC staff. So okay, so in the catalog, and this is clarification. So you actually have a list in there of here's the executives, four executives, and then you have here's a list of the executives that don't live in the state, right? And I thought that was kind of interesting to put in a catalog. And then I was just, well, who's running the institute here in Arizona? And do students go there? Like, I'm wondering if you have enough people that are helping run the Bailey is what I'm trying to get to.
Yeah, that's a great question. In Arizona, we have Daniel Irwin. He's a curriculum developer. He's also our freshman studies program instructor. We also have former Judge Ron Wilson. Ron Wilson has been working very closely with us to develop relationships there in Arizona.
And do students go to that location? Like, can they go and walk in?
So all the courses are on the mobile app or online. So everything is online.
Okay, so in your catalog, you make reference to something. That's why I'm asking. It makes some comment to a registrar site. Like, you can go in to a registrar site. And so that made it sound like there was more than one. And then I read it was all online. So I think you guys need to take another spin at all of your information. It's because there's a lot of inconsistencies. And I'll just go down through some more examples. You have a cancellation and a refund policy, but it actually doesn't give you a refund policy. It doesn't say outside of the cancellation that's required by the state. If a student enrolls in your class and they want to drop in week 2 or 3 or 4 or whatever, there's nothing in there that says if they get any type of refund. I think it's missing. In addition, there is in your catalog, it talks about 3 academic calendar terms, right? So fall, spring, summer 1, summer 2. Which leads me to a question about how long your courses are that they do. Cause I couldn't, there was like nowhere in there that talked about how long courses are. It talked about synchronous learning, which I think, right, I'm assuming you're doing Zoom or something with students, but I can't figure out how long people are in classes. And the reason being is that you also have a vacation policy, and it literally says you guys are pretty much closed for 2 months, right? From, December 15th to January 11th, and then from May 11th to something through January. I don't know. Your policy looks like it's closed for 2 months. So then I don't know how the three terms work.
Yeah, Dr. Luck, all of these are really good questions. This catalog is the exact same catalog that you approved last year, but we're going to work hard to make sure that we make whatever edits are necessary to make sure that you're satisfied. All this feedback is really good. We think we're going to move to a rolling calendar instead of having vacation for multiple months. All this feedback makes us better. And we promise you, until you are fully satisfied, we will not serve one student in the state of Arizona. And that is our goal, is to have a strong, excellent program. And we're 8 months old. So we're very new at this, so I apologize, but I promise by the next time we meet, all these questions will be addressed.
Yeah, because you refer to that now accepting rolling admissions on your website. So I'm now conflicted, and I'm going to tell you something that is very much troubling me. On your website, you have a Purpose University course offering schedule. Okay, when you pull that up, that shows 4 terms. And creating more consternation is it shows that it looks like you guys have are saying that your bachelor's program can be completed in 2 years. Okay?
I think with an overload, and two summer semesters.
I do not think that is even actually possible. If you are using the standard of Carnegie units, it would be impossible. There's not enough hours in the day to have this kind of load and service, who I'm assuming you're saying is like working adults and stuff that you're looking for students. It's not possible. So I think you have to go back and redo the math for using the Carnegie unit, right? It's, you know, the 15 hours of one lecture, 45 is even if you have internships or labs or something, and then 30 hours outside for that 15. It's, you know, so the hours aren't possible, and that's where I'm really struggling.
Well, this is great feedback. I went to the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill that had two summer semesters. So I think that's how we were designing it, as those 2 years can be supplemented by overtiming in two summer semesters. But from this conversation, Dr. Moore, I think we hear that we need to go back to the drawing board. And we want to make sure that the drawing board pass your muster.
Yeah, that would be really good. You should probably also include how you're calculating those, your credits, when you go back and you review those. So when you're doing a two semester, right, a one and a two, it's half that term, right? So they're condensed classes. So you really can't carry these loads in a 7 or 8 week part, you know, half of a semester. So your timing all throughout this thing has to get relooked at to be consistent, so that students actually know what they're also signing up for.
Thank you,
Doc. All right. Thank you. I also, I don't understand your admissions policy. The words say students are required to reading and typing skills consistent with a high school diploma or GED. So I'm unclear what consistent to that means. Does that mean if you're requiring a high school diploma or a GED, I would say that thing. But the way that this reads, it looks like I have to show that I can have a high school diploma or GED, but it's not clear.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
Okay. The next part is about grades. On the grades, it says that each course will have a grading rubric using a 4-point scale. But there's not like a, does that translate to a grading scale? Does that translate over to A, B, C's, D's? Or what are you using? Because then later when you're talking about SAP, it uses the traditional GPA. So I'm unclear as to what students are going to get in each course. And then, you know, usually it's on cycles. Like, when are you going to review students on a SAP cycle? So all of those things, I think, have to get fleshed out more. And then there's a comment in here that also talks about, you have the word specific graduate degree in there, and you don't have any graduate degrees. So going through the language and taking out anything that doesn't apply.
Yeah, we have a new web guide, but we're going to get on that as soon as possible. Were you able to look at some of the virtual reality stuff that we have on there?
Well, when the website stopped working, no. And according to Kevin, unless it's part of the program of study, it doesn't, right? I'm not looking at it. That's what I'm getting.
Awesome.
So I don't think that does, according to your course catalog and stuff. It looks like it was.
We've recently been awarded $250,000 by the National Science Foundation to build these new virtual reality courses. And they're going to be the first in the country. And we really want to feature Arizona in these courses. So as people are learning from around the country, they're going to be learning about nature. And they're going to be learning about the beautiful nature in Arizona from all of these different viewpoints in a 360 view. So if you do get a chance, please, where you see the Oculus headset, click on the check-in for more, and you can see some of our research. But there's one thing I've learned from this meeting. We've got to do better, and I appreciate you.
Yeah, I think – and I don't know the experience, but maybe of Dr. Moore, I think you said you were a principal, right? And I think there are some similarities, but there are some differences. And I'm not sure if Ms. Lau has that, but making sure that you might find someone who can help you with some of the standard things that you have to have in order to operate a school with the administrative capacity that you need, because that's the flags that will go off for us, is whether or not there's, you got, you know, how to operate a university, right? I mean, it's, you know how to go to school and everything, but the operations of it are different to make sure students are serviced the way they need. Okay. With that, I'd like to turn it over to any of my fellow board members if they have any questions. Susan.
Yeah, thank you for the presentation and how welcoming the feedback was. I think that was great. My question was about DX. Since you haven't officially applied yet and you can't yet, have you gone to any workshops? That would be really helpful, I think.
Yes, I'm actually working with them on their upcoming conference, and I'm going to be one of the speakers at the conference. I'm looking forward to a continued relationship with DEAC. But Leah, Dr. Matthews is very excited about Purpose University, the nonprofit Purpose Institute in Arizona. We're going to figure out how to communicate that better. And kind of the pedagogy that we're looking to change in education. Listen, status quo is very easy. It's very easy to do what everyone has done for 200 years in education. We're going to face some hurdles because we're trying to do something new in education. We're trying to do virtual reality. We're trying to help students tap into their purpose in life. We're trying to heal mental illness. These are not easy challenges, and I need someone like Dr. Leck to help us to be better. So we appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think to her point about we're not really in a position where we can directly advise you. You could work with the board staff, but yeah, beyond just, you mentioned going to a DEI seminar or something, but like if you go to their annual conference, or, you know, you'll get a ton of great support there. So that was my only question.
Thank you, Susan. I will be going to the annual conference this year. Thank you.
Yeah, this is Mike Romano. I just have a couple questions, and I'm trying to get clarity in it. So I may need to bounce back and forth between our board staff to get some of that clarity and then the school itself. When I look at the application and reading through that, it seems like there's some gaps just in regards to the staff. They have zero staff currently, and that may be because they're of how they're situated here. But then they call out 32 graduates. Placed in the field when they haven't had any enrollments and they haven't had any graduates yet. So I'm just not sure if I'm missing something
That was my mistake. We have a certificate program, and these were graduates of the certificate program, but not the undergraduate program.
Okay. And I realize we're just looking at the degree piece of it and that. And so I know we're kind of mixing a little bit of apples with oranges. Are these the 1,100 students that you have right now, are they intended to be feeders into this program, or are they completely separate type of training and education?
Good question. They're not intended to be feeders. A lot of these people already have advanced degrees. They're really just trying to improve their learning skills in some of our areas of purpose education, the pedagogy of autoethnography, which is story listening and storytelling. So we offer certificates in those areas also for educators.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that. Financially, I'm trying to, obviously it's a runway to get to the DEAC piece of it. And Ms. Lamont, this may be just a question of clarity from your side. So it seems like, if I heard this correctly and looking through this, the curriculum hasn't really been developed as of yet to essentially teach this degree. It's in the process of development, but yet with the licensure currently, the school could attempt to enroll students into the program that has not yet been really built. And so I'm wondering the sensitivity around that, if I'm understanding it correctly, of essentially having a licensure that allows them the ability to enroll students into a program that they're kind of maybe building while the plane is in the air. And if we need to have sensitivity, and I don't even know if this is in our right, to essentially allow them to continue to build the plane, but put some type of hold on enrolling. I don't know if that's a practice that's been considered before, but it just concerns me. Not that the school isn't making all attempts to move in the right direction. It's just, it doesn't seem as though the substance is there. I'm understanding.
There's one point of clarification. All of the courses are developed in the traditional format that they would be taught on Zoom. What we are currently doing is hiring professors to do asynchronous courses.
Okay.
And we've paid for the first year. All of the first year courses are already taped and filmed asynchronously. We have all 4 years in the traditional format, and we have a qualified PhD in each one of those courses. So I just want to make sure we're clear on that.
That's helpful. Thank you. I think I was missing that of feeling as though there wasn't actually any curriculum that was developed to be taught. So thank you for that explanation. And so I'll pull that question back from that standpoint. I will go back to the financial side of it, of, you know, how your feeling is of having the financial stability to continue to run this pathway forward, and if there are any concerns that you have as you're moving forward in this manner.
So currently, I run a for-profit company. We've been funded $500,000 by the National Science Foundation. My staff volunteers as we're building this nonprofit together. So that's really how we've developed so far, is we have a full staff of volunteers. So that's how we can have highly, Miko has a degree from Berkeley. You know, that's how we can have highly qualified people without being able to have the fiscal ability to pay them. So eventually our goal is that the school will pay for itself and we can donate a lot less moving forward. That's really the long-term goal.
Thank you. That's helpful.
I think you should probably also talk to DIAC about that, only because, well, it's very nice. I think looking at it from a, you have the actual resources that you need, you know, faculty wise to do this school. Volunteers are nice, but volunteers doesn't mean that they're totally responsible, if that makes any sense, if you hear what I'm saying, right? So I would also just have a conversation with DIAC on that part too. I didn't understand that, so.
That's a great question, Doc. We're starting from scratch. We don't have a $1 million donation for faculty before students. We're starting from scratch. And if there's one thing I know you can appreciate and Arizona can appreciate, is the bootstrap mentality that we're out here doing. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's really all the questions that I had. I would consider if board staff could continue to work with Purpose Institute from the standpoint of just cleaning up that application. So at least as it's referred to from a historical standpoint, that there's accurate information given the school's response. Mr. Romano.
Sure. And I appreciate that. Mr. Romano, members of the board, keeping in mind that the application itself, we have no control over. So whatever data, information and uploads that are put into that renewal application, we work with the institution afterwards, once we start that review process, to update catalogs and enrollment agreements and things of that nature. But whatever they submit is what they are attesting to is official, is correct, and their attestation at the end of that states that. So that's why when you see an application, that is not, we don't put any of that information in there. That is strictly the institution that does that. So we will work with the school moving forward to make sure that there's clarity. This is the first renewal that they've been through, their second application that they've had. And the questions don't change. So we will certainly work with the institute to make sure that they understand next year, because it will be, you know, if this is granted, they go to a provisional status, which they will still come before the board every year through the process of being accredited. And then once they're accredited, they're done at a staff level. So you will see them at least for the next couple of years until they get through the accreditation process.
Well, based on Dr. Drakeford's comments earlier, I have a motion that I would like to put out, which would be that we defer till February, the February meeting, to give them a month to go clean the stuff up, clean the application up, and really get that catalog ready to have a student before they run into their issues. So my motion would just be to defer Purpose Institute until the February meeting.
And this is Susan. I would second that motion.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion by just the board? Okay, hearing none. Mr. Lamont, would you take roll?
Dr. Leck.
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano.
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Ms. Wallace, have you joined? And Ms. Cardullo. Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By your vote of four ayes, no nays, two absent, that motion passes. And just for a clarity point to the board members and to the institution, Purpose Institute's license expired on December 31st. So we typically allow them the process of, which is why they're in this cycle now, being reviewed by the board. By moving them to February, their license still is valid. If they are not approved in the February window, then we have to look for timing issues with how long we can continue to, the institute can continue to operate on an expired license. So I will communicate that to the school, but I want the board to understand that as well.
That's helpful.
Kevin,
thank you.
This is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. So as long as the board doesn't make a final decision on the application, then they will be able to operate on their previous license until that time. So it won't go into expiration.
That is correct. And if we move past the February, then we will have to have a discussion in terms of what our rules and statutes are that allow the institution to continue to operate on a license that is, you know, the due date was January 1. So that's a conversation that we can have with you and with others as it relates to our rules.
Well, thank you. And Purpose Institute, don't be discouraged. This is just part of the process, right? Dr. Leck has taken some time to give you some good guidance. You've been extremely receptive to that, and we appreciate that. And the opportunity here is over the next 30 days or so to be able to try and do your best to clean up some of these areas as we move forward. We have the confidence that you speak with passion and enthusiasm. We can see your purpose and intent. We're excited about that, and we have confidence in you that as we meet in February, we can move this forward, hopefully in that successful way that all of us want to move forward with it. So please work closely with the board staff over the next several weeks, and we look forward to seeing you back here in February.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you too. All right. We will now move on to the conditional to regular license renewal, which is Resilient Healthcare Academy, which Ms. Cardullo is the board lead on. Mr. Lamont, do you have any updates prior to passing the baton over to Ms. Cardullo?
I do not.
Very good.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Romano. I would like to present Resilient Healthcare Academy and begin with asking if Ms. Tiana Campbell is here, if she would like to make an opening statement.
Hi, good morning. Are you able to hear me?
Yes, thank you. Welcome.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for having me. We're a small school. We're steady growing. And so I'm just happy to be here this morning. And I look forward to any recommendations or anything that you guys have for me.
Okay, thank you. So I will begin. I have a few questions for you, and then I'll open it up to my fellow board members and see if they have any questions or comments as well. I was looking at your application. I can't tell. Did you provide the background information pieces? It didn't show if it was past legal or other investigations.
For me?
Yeah, or maybe board staff can answer that. I didn't see that was.
Okay. No, I don't have any.
Okay.
Past legal or anything.
Okay. That's okay for me. That's one thing I noticed on that. Other than that, your application looked very complete. The plan, you've got 5 programs listed. And is there a plan to start all programs, it looks like, in the next week? Is that right? Looks like anywhere between January 30th and February 6th.
Yeah, our classes start back on Monday, actually. And we're finishing out. We have one student that is finishing her clinicals at a medical assistant facility, or we go to Native Health, which is a clinic, and then our new classes will begin coming up in February.
Okay, thank you. January. And you cut out just a little bit, so if you could just make sure to speak close to the phone so that everyone can hear. And then just for the good of the board, how many students do you currently have, and is it in all the 5 programs?
Right now, just one finishing up, because we had, with the holiday, with Christmas and New Year's, they went on a break, and we had one student that was still in her externship. So okay. Right now, she's the only one that's finishing up.
Okay. On the website, that's understandable because you're new. But on the website, it kind of looks like all 5 programs are going to start up in the next week, but is that... like if someone called today, they could get added. Would you have a class of 1? Is there any caveat on if you don't have enough people, you're not going to start it? Because it looks like all of them are starting.
We are still kind of, I don't like to have a class of 1 with the CN, with our other program we have before. And when we first started the medical assistant, we did have a class of 1. But we are still working on, I mean, of course, that's not ideal, but with it being new programs, we don't really want to turn away students either. So we've had 1 and 2 this past year with our program being new. But we are still working with our marketing and things like that to get the program out. We haven't had as many people in the signing up for the medical assistant and phlebotomy. Well, phlebotomy does well, okay. Just the medical assistant as we do with the CNA. But yes and no, as far as running the class with just 1. It's not ideal, but as a growing program, we really just want to try to get students in so that they can tell other students and kind of build from that.
Okay, thank you. And for the benefit of the board, these programs range from as little as 60 clock hours to 720 clock hours. So it's possible that a student comes and goes pretty quickly. And I just was wondering what that'll do, if you'll have cohorts or if you know, when you think about your requirements to post and make sure the student outcomes are okay, what does that do to a class size of 1 when you talk about your pass rates and graduation rates and retention and employability? So that was my question about that. Also on your website, it doesn't say what happens after next week. Is there going to be a start every month? Is there going to be a start every quarter, every year? I think that would be helpful information. Understanding, of course, that marketing probably wanted you to push the soonest start first, right? I get that.
Yes. So with the classes, we typically start, and we kind of bounce it off of the way we do our CNAs. We typically start with maybe a couple days in between as soon as the next class ends. So this past year with our medical assistant, as soon as we send the medical assistant student, I'll just go off the ones that we had. As soon as they go to externship, we start the next one. Does that make sense? Okay.
Yes, I'm familiar with that, with externship slots. So that's good. Also, the only other thing on your website I wanted to mention is that you show that you are approved by the Board of Nursing for the CNA, and it says also approved by the Arizona Private Board of Education or something like that. You want to make sure to reference the Arizona State Board for Private Postsecondary Education, which is our legal name, and maybe even include the URL or the website would be good as well. Okay. My next.
I'll look at that.
That's an easy fix, right? So the next section of questions I had was about the catalog, and my main question I wanted to ask, that the thing I saw come up several different places in your catalog, is surrounding attendance. It's a bit of a concern possibly in both this satisfactory academic progress section, also in the tardiness section, also in the makeup section. You have a phrase you've been using that says, make every effort to attend, and absences are for sufficient reasons. That's what the students see in their catalog and in the handbook. Do you have some sort of internal policy or procedure to, like a rubric for that, or a way to make sure that's fair? Because sufficient reasons, making every effort, those are pretty subjective. I would be concerned that, how would you administer that fairly?
We do have in our policies and procedures, with it being medical and nursing programs, it's kind of very important that they're there, that they're on time and things like that, especially with externships, because we're giving them their time, or someone else is giving them time to be in a facility. So the externships are pretty strict on like making sure that they're there and they're on time and that they follow whoever they're precepting with their schedule. But usually if you miss a day, you just have to make those hours up. So I can word it differently in the catalog, but I want to say in our policies and procedures, I don't have it right here in front of me. It just really details like if you miss however many hours you miss, you have to make those hours up, even with the externship.
Right. Yeah. And my experience has been that sometimes people have really good reasons. They're having like cancer treatments every single week. Well, at some point, that's too many absences, even though that's definitely a very valid, mm-hmm. important reason to be gone. But at some point, you're not there. You can't make up the clock hours. On a technicality, you said the makeup hours, it says you can make up 8 hours. But it looks like this is a 7-hour day. The classes run 9 to 5 with a lunch from 12 to 1. I don't know if that's nitpicking too much, but I know you have to add up the exact hours. So I wasn't sure where they have 8 hours.
Is that for a medical assistant?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Okay, I'll have to take a look at that. Again, I don't have the catalog right in front of me. If that's what, and you said it says 9 to 5 with lunch 12 to 1.
Yeah. So just double check that. I know what the intent was. If someone misses a day, they make up a day, right? So just make sure your clock hours are adding up.
Okay.
And then I thought it was great. You know, you did get very specific about tardiness. 3 tardies equals 1 absence. So that was good that you did put that exactly, you know, specified that in the catalog. Okay. My last comment that I had before I ask my colleagues here for additional questions is just on the advertising language. It said something about you can seek employment when you graduate. Now, I would just make sure to add that caveat if you get licensed, right? So you don't guarantee the license, and you haven't, but you did say they can seek employment as a CNA when they're done. MAs. There are employment opportunities with MAs, but you wouldn't be a licensed MA unless you got a license. I mean, I'm aware that you can get employed without a license.
Correct. And so, that's always kind of tricky for the students because they do have to have their certificate of completion, but they can get employed without the actual taking the certification test through NHA and getting the actual license. So, yeah, so it's always a little tricky, but yes, they do meet the certificate of completion to be employed, and most of the employers offer the employment.
Okay. So, yeah, I would just say I think that's fair. As long as that language doesn't spill over into the nursing side, and as long as they say that you do have to have your certificate of completion, and then you can seek employment, and it doesn't. Yeah. Sorry, I didn't hear the last part.
Oh, I'm sorry. Someone was asking me a question.
That's okay. So all in all, I thought your website, catalog, advertising, I thought it all looked really good and wanted to congratulate you on your application. But I wanted to also see what my fellow board members might have for questions because we all see different things.
Okay.
And I have Dr. Lecht.
You guys started kind of touching on it, but I was looking at the entrance requirements for these programs, and I'm starting to try and line them up, right, because they go in a different order for both of them. But I was just curious, and this isn't my background, but the, like, one of them has, like, if you're going to do a medical assistant, you have to have a Social Security required, but if you're doing a medication aid, it's requested. Is that true?
You have to have a Social Security for all of them. Medication aid, we actually are going to be removing that, but you have to have a Social Security for all of them.
Okay, you might want to go through. I just noticed, like, there's just differences, and whether there's differences, that's great, but I'm unclear because I'm looking at back and forth, but, like, the medical assistant requires a clean background check, but the other one doesn't. And even though you're doing
it, depends on the externship. So if the externship site wants a background check, and just because we have different externships, some students may say, hey, I already work at a clinic and I want to go, then they may not have to have one if they already work there. And others may have to have a background check for, I know ours want a background check. The one that we are actually contracted with, they want the background, they want the COVID, they want the TB. But if a student presents us with an externship and we have to, like, start a new contract with that, they may not ask for one. Does that make sense or no?
Well, under medical assistant, it says they must have a clean background check at entrance requirements. So I guess I'm assuming they're presenting that at the beginning, right? I just noticed some differences, so just want to make, we might want to just go back and make sure, because the Social Security card is request, it says request on one, it doesn't say required, so I just noticed the difference, and I just wanted to point out that if you want to go back and kind of look at those and make sure that they're correct.
Okay, and this is just the catalog that you're looking at?
Yep.
Okay, all right, I will take a look.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Luck. Any other questions from you, or, okay, any other board member questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, I would like to recommend that we move to approve the conditional to regular non-accredited vocational program license application with the stipulation that Resilient Healthcare Academy would maintain a $15,000 surety bond.
I'll second.
And Ms. Campbell, I think I heard you said absolutely. So you would be amenable to that?
I would.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, Mr. LaMountain, would you take a roll call?
Dr. Leck.
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano.
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace, have you attended? Mr. Wallace? No. And then Ms. Cardullo.
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By your vote of four ayes, no nays, and two absent, that motion passes.
OK, Congratulations.
Yes. Very good. Thank you very much for your time, Ms. Campbell. And yes, we will now.
Thank you, everyone. You guys have a good day.
Thank you. All right. We will move on to NextGen T, where I am the board lead. Mr. LaMountain, any updates that you would like to provide?
At this time, no additional updates. All the information has been added to your board folder.
Very good. Looks like Mr. Hess is joining us from the school. Mr. Hess, would you go ahead and like to introduce yourself, anyone else who's joining you from the school today, and then if you'd like to make an opening statement.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Romano. And hello, everyone, and good day to you, board. My name is Jacob Hess. I'm co-founder and chief academic officer here at NextGenT, where we train IT roles in network engineering and cybersecurity. I also have our director of finance, Steve Tarr, here with us on the call. And to open, I do have a couple points I'd like to mention, if that's okay.
Please.
All right. Thank you. So to begin, well, it's 3 points. To begin, I wanted to make it known that we've had a lot of changes during the past year, 2022. And the outcomes that were much different from our initial forecast and application. So in summary, our academy has gone online only as of July 2022, and we have abandoned all plans for any in-person training. So we did not run and will not run any in-person training at all. Additionally, I wanted to point out that our initial application for licensure and our relationship with the Arizona PPSC and State Board was processed and managed by our previous Chief Operations Officer, Rob Cow. And Rob has departed NextGenT, our company, as of July 2022. So the main reason I'm mentioning this is because it recently came to my attention that we were at a deficit on our bond payment, which was approximately $106K per the initial application was remaining. We did pay $15K, but there was $106K remaining. So as Rob has left the company, some things did fall through the crack. However, you know, this is no real excuse. It's no real excuse, and we do accept the responsibility of this occurrence. So I personally, as a co-founder of the company, taken on this relationship and working diligently to ensure that we're making all attempts to be fully compliant and meeting all the needs of the State Board. And lastly, I just wanted to point out that we have enrolled 26 students who reside in the state of Arizona. I think on the application at 18, but the most recent update I got, I was 26 students in the state of Arizona in 2022. And so we're curious if that has any impact on the bond amount, which may be potentially reduced. And those are my points. Thank you, Boyd.
All right, that's helpful. I have a couple questions that I'll want to get into. I'll defer to Mr. LaMountain in regards to the amounts of how we evaluate that piece and what the right amount should be for a surety bond in this particular case. But that said, I also want to clarify, you still intend on operating like your the corporate offices, the entity itself, intend on operating here in Arizona from a home base standpoint. Is that correct?
We have been doing that, although we are a distributed team. Steve, would you mind commenting on the facility? I think you had the most recent update on that. You there, Steve? So we actually are closing down our main academy campus at 135 North 2nd Avenue.
Yeah. So sorry, Jacob, I was on mute.
Yeah, no worries. You can go ahead, Steve. Thank you.
Yeah, my apologies. Yes. So we had a, five-year lease with, a development group in Phoenix and, had physical office space in a building in downtown Phoenix. We ended up, when we realized we were not going to be running in-person training, we ended up essentially, you know, abandoning the building. There just weren't enough people in Phoenix, and there was no reason to really go into the office. Subsequent to that, we ended up working out an agreement with the building developer to get out of our lease. So we are now free and clear of that lease and do not have a lease on physical space in Phoenix, but in terms of a headquarters, although virtual, will still remain in Phoenix in the state of Arizona. I think you're on mute, Mr. Romano.
That craziness of mute. Sorry about that. Mr. Lamont, I believe that is really the piece that we wanted to verify was that they still intend on headquartering here in Arizona. If they did not and they resided in another state, then in this particular case, licensure would not be necessary from that
state. That's correct. Mr. Romano and members of the board, that's correct. So we had a number of conversations with Mr. Hess and Mr. Tarr prior to this meeting into last year about initially they were not going to look at renewing their license. And then it was made clear during that conversation that they're still going to be headquartered in Arizona, which would require licensure.
Great. And I think you mentioned at this current time, you have 16 students from Arizona at this point.
Well, Mr. Romano, it was actually 26 students enrolled in the year 2022 in the state of Arizona.
Okay. Dr. you have a question?
Just related to that, though, if you don't have anyone in Arizona and no headquarters that's not virtual, can you be licensed in the state by the state without physical presence?
We do have employees in Arizona. Our CEO resides in Arizona.
Right.
We have, I think, at least one instructor in Arizona. And
also, we have like a handful of employees there, including our CEO, yes.
Okay, so we're using that address as it.
Yes, ma'am.
As we get into this, I'm trying to get my arms around some of the financials here. What was provided demonstrated a loss for the institution of a pretty significant amount, but the statements themselves, the financial statements, were bucketed at such a high level, it was really unclear what might be actually causing the deficits, if I'm reading it correctly. Mr. Tarr, I don't know if you'd like to speak to that.
Yeah, certainly. NextGenT, since its inception, has operated as a deficit, and we raised a pretty significant Series A round. We have been slowly whittling through that Series A round while inching towards break even. So we are very close to break even at this point, but we'll probably be raising more money in Q2 of this year. And it's really just a matter of us trying to scale the company and scale the growth, in addition to pivoting our business model, as Jacob mentioned, we pivoted our business model pretty significantly from 2021 to 2022. And some of that takes resources. And really a lot of the burn comes from marketing and advertising. That's a pretty significant portion of it. So we have, There have been years, and even before I was with NextGenT, there have been years where the marketing and advertising spend was probably not justified in terms of the number of students that were being enrolled. So we are, constantly working on keeping our CAC under control. So I don't know if that answers your question or not, Mr. Romano.
To a degree, I guess I'm seeing it a little differently than that, only because it seems as though from the, and I'll just use percentages here not to disclose any financial information, but it seems as though really the marketing and advertising makes up about at least maybe around 10% of what's called out from a expense standpoint from the financials, and the remaining 90% falls into operating expense or what's deemed as all other expenses. And so it's surprising to me, just given the revenue that's being collected and then these very large buckets that are creating such a significant loss. I guess I'm struggling to understand the economics of it, and when you talk about scaling and all of that, I'm trying to get my arms around the solvency of the school, the institution, and its ability to continue based on what has been presented here. Unless I'm missing.
I'm assuming you're looking at the financials that were provided in the application.
We receive. I would defer to Mr. Lamont. I'm reviewing to a PDF of the P&L of the 2022 that was provided. What I believe from the institution. That's what I'm referring to. That's
yes.
Kind of creating that amount.
Yes.
Now absolutely. It does look like you're ramping up into this year with your marketing and expense, marketing and advertising, certainly going up, but at the same time, proportionally, the operating and all other expenses seem to be going up as well. So I guess there was a disconnect there when you're saying, well, most of it's being caused by marketing and advertising when it seems as though it's being caused by other areas of the business. And I guess I'm just trying to get clarity.
If I may make a comment real quick to Mr. Romano. Our company was a lot larger before. We were running live cohorts. It wasn't in person. It was online, but we were running live cohorts. We had a lot more support staff. Our company at one point had reached almost 60 employees around that. And we entered 2022 with that team. However, when we pivoted to online only, we were able to significantly reduce the size of our team. So our burn from an employee perspective was really, really, really high at the beginning of 2022. That has been reduced, but perhaps that does accommodate for some of the confusion you're having on that. However, I do understand too, and I'm sure Steve does as well, that with everything bucketed there, if you do need some more specific breakdowns of things, I'm sure we can get that for you.
It's usually helpful when we do see a little more of a breakdown versus just three bucket line items, you know, to appreciate kind of what is going on. It's especially when we're seeing an operation and loss right now and what that looks like. And it seems as though as you're creeping into 2023, your estimates would suggest that you are going to significantly increase your revenues. In fact, almost a multiple of three on your revenues, which as you've, I think, previously stated from what you provided financially didn't necessarily meet those targets. And so I guess I'm also trying to appreciate the optimism of the estimates, to get to that kind of financial solvency.
Yeah, sorry, I'm hearing an echo from somewhere. We pivoted pretty significantly our business model from 2021 to 2022. In 2021, we were offering income sharing agreements as the primary form of, you know, enrollment and payment for a student. Assuming you guys are somewhat familiar with income sharing agreements, but those are typically, contracts for all intents and purposes. They're contracts which are paid out over a period of, for us, it was 4 years. And that significantly delays a lot of the revenue. And so we have, pretty significant accounts receivable as due to those ISAs. When we pivoted to online only and started selling basically, it's the same training, but just selling it and asking students to either pay in full or go acquire vocational loans. And then those vocational loan companies will advance us significantly, anywhere from 80 to 93% of the actual loan amount. So we pivoted off a delayed revenue model to a, almost instantaneous revenue model. And with the intent of making a heavy push to get to break even, which we are on track to do right now. And that I feel like is reflected in the financials.
That's helpful. I didn't see that level of detail to appreciate moving from an ISA to essentially where you're now asking the student to pay upfront for their education or as they go versus some type of delayed piece. So that is helpful. Thank you for that understanding. And I can certainly see, obviously, you've put a lot of thought and consideration into how to staff appropriately and turn this around into a more profitable outcome from that standpoint. And Mr. Hess, you described, you know, with the previous leader within that organization as well, departing in the July timeframe. What was noticed and brought to our attention and in transparency by the board staff had shared with me that NextGen T was even considering maybe not renewing their state licensure. And then, and as a result, we kind of got everything kind of got needed to be accelerated when you made the decision to move forward. But some of the things that were noted throughout the, and let me take a quick look at my notes here. I believe it was through the period of June through September of 2022, a number of concerns on your marketing, on your website, and in email communications created great pause and concern for the board staff that they brought that to your attention. I don't know if these matters have necessarily been resolved. I won't try and recount all of them at this point, but I will highlight a couple just for the purposes of illustrating some of what we would consider to be fairly concerning from that standpoint. Using things like accredited course from that standpoint, giving, you know, taking engineers from zero to $72,000 income with no referencing associated with that, referring to the amount of available jobs out there with no referencing to what that looks like, average base salaries of $91,250, you know, again, using potential logos of military and other organizations without potentially having releases to do so of those, and just and then into the email concerns and considerations, you know, an adjusting of tuition for the courses that you were offering, essentially discounting them to $5 a course, moving away from what your actual tuition was. Again, talking about landing six-figure jobs for people and what that all looks like. And then also emails going out talking about investing in NextGen T to potential student populations and what that looks like. So it really rings of a lack of oversight in the compliance area, understanding the statutes that you've agreed to from a licensure standpoint. And I guess I'd just like to hear from you, Mr. Hess, how that's being resolved and addressed as we move forward.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Romano. So as I picked all this up, I've personally been holding our team accountable and making sure that we're doing what we need to do in order to be compliant. Just in regard to a few of these, especially the marketing, and even yesterday, I just had another call with our marketing director, ensuring there's no, you know, land a six-figure job in IT type of marketing. You know, all the points that you're making there regarding our marketing, we fixed majority of everything, I believe. So if we want to do another review on that and follow up, I think you will find that these things have been resolved. We also removed the Air Force logos and things.
Mr. Hess, if I could just interrupt you, yes, your website, I mean, just going to the front page actually still has Level Up Now, base salaries at $91,250. All occupations, 45,760. There's no references to any of these statistics that are being provided here on any level. You're still using military and other logos that you may have released.
I'm looking at our main website right now, sir. I'm not seeing the military logos on our main page. And I can also comment on the salary thing. So currently, yeah, it says Level Up Now, the average salary for cybersecurity analysts ranges from around $53K per year to $116K per year, with an average base salary of $91,250, which is from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics.
I am seeing that now. I apologize. My website was loading a little slow here.
Yes, sir, no problem. We also have our FTC disclaimer on the website at the bottom. So I thought we were meeting those needs and have solved any of the violations that were reported in regards to the website.
Right. In regards to the companies and logos, are you able to use those with, or I'm assuming you have releases or that, or are you just copywriting?
Releases for those logos. That's a good question. I don't think we have releases for those logos. What was brought to our attention was that when these logos were mentioned, the complaint was that we needed to be able to prove that we have students that were actually working at these companies, and we do. I have a list of students that can be referenced who do work at these different companies here. But by all means, if that kind of thing needs to be removed, then, you know, we can do that as well.
Yeah, I think traditionally, and I'll turn it over to you, Mr. LaMountain, but you can certainly list the companies, but you using their logos without their copyright and approval to do that, that's just not okay.
I'll make a note of that.
It's just not okay. Mr. LaMountain, would you like to comment?
Yeah, it's just to reiterate that piece in the conversation that we had prior is that, yes, you can have a list of locations where individuals go as long as you can prove that list. But certainly anything that is related to a logo in any place that's on your website would be very problematic for you, which causes us concern, because if it's problematic for you and a legal issue, that means you're going to be spending money defending legal issues as opposed to spending money educating students.
Yes, sir. That makes sense. We'll definitely take care of this. I wasn't aware of that particular aspect of the violation. Thank you for bringing that to my attention. And I'll definitely make sure our entire team understands this aspect.
Mr. Hess, kind of continuing on in that vein, though, it seems as though you're taking a very active role in that, which I appreciate. Can you, from a compliance oversight, who within your organization really have that understanding and skill set to ensure that you're living within the licensure agreement that you did agree to?
Who has the understanding and skill set? I mean, I'm taking over the relationship here, so that would fall upon me at this time. If that answers your question.
I guess where I'm asking, so you're acting as the compliance individual for the review of materials, marketing materials, and policies and procedures in engaging with students. That's you're saying you don't have someone for that role. You're taking
Yes, sir. We have a marketing director, and we also have our website designer who work together to deploy things on our website. So I would make it known to them, but it would be me who is holding them responsible to meet that compliance, being that I'm the one who is working with the state board, and so I'm the one who understands what those requirements are. It will be up to me to relay them to them properly.
Right. And I realize you have people within your company that are doing that work for you, but there has to be some type of compliance review to make sure that, for example, testimonials from current students and other things of that nature and so on and so forth. That's one example that may not be applicable here, but I just want to have sensitivity that there is a review process that's taking place to ensure compliance, because it certainly would suggest that, you know, at least through the September period, that was not necessarily the case. But Mr. LaMountain, I'll turn it over to you. You may have some comments about how Mr. Hess and the school have responded since receiving those number of allegations and concerns.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Romano, members of the board. Mr. Hess, I believe that we had a conversation before the end of the 22 that you were going to pursue a firm to help you. I can't give you advice, but I know that we had a conversation around having someone that has professional school licensure understanding, and I believe that you identified a firm that was going to help you. I haven't seen if that has been the case, so that would be a question to you. And then in regards to the response back and forth, you all have been providing board staff, Keith, myself, with some updated information. But as we've just noticed today, the challenge that we continue to have with NextGen T is that you say it's going to get done, and then we have 233 schools that we have to monitor on a day in and day out basis, and I can't spend all the time on you. And so when we come back, we review a website again, and when we see changes haven't been made, which we've just identified here today, that some of those changes have yet to be made, it remains problematic for staff to basically, for lack of a better term, babysit a school in terms of their compliance. So guess, and perhaps you can address that and to Mr. Romano's, have you brought on board compliance professionals?
So yes, sir, we did actually talk with a lawyer at Cooley. We didn't talk with them about all the compliance things specifically and reviewing all of that, but we did seek some advice. Could we have a follow-up and have a more thorough review? We could. But I think with my understanding now, with myself picking things up, and my apologies, I've been trying to ramp myself up in all this. And as I'm doing it, I'm seeing actually how much detailed work and attention it actually and care that it really needs, right? And so my apologies, it feels like to you guys, we've been lax. But my full intention is to make sure that it's no longer the case here moving forward, and that we're on top of everything 100%. You know, we don't want to cause you guys any problems. We want to be in a happy relationship here. And we also want to be fully compliant with everything, because it's best for everyone anyway. So those are my intentions, if that helps.
Okay.
And if you don't mind, I can make a comment real quick, because Mr. Romano, I noticed that you mentioned the $5 course. I just wanted to make sure you understood that that course is not a core part of any of our programs. That wasn't the program itself. It was a Network Plus course. And that offering is just to provide folks with an affordable option to try out some of our training. The program is something else. That was just a course, and it was never offered for, more than $25 at any time.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I think the sensitivity is, when you're depending on your advertising and how you're promoting the company and the disclosures that you're using and calling out that you're licensed by the Arizona State Board and what you end up putting in that package, how it may be misconstrued by a consumer, right? Of thinking, oh, this course is covered, even though it may not be covered type of a thing, or licensed, if you will. And so it's kind of mixing a little bit of apples with oranges. And that's part of the sensitivity of making sure you're living into the licensure and what that looks like, so that it doesn't create confusion in the marketplace. Ultimately for us, one of the main purposes of this board, not only to help businesses move forward from an education standpoint, delivery, is also to protect our consumers as well in the state of Arizona, so that they don't suddenly, for example, say, hey, the reason I came to NextGenT was because they are directly affiliated with Google and Lyft and others, Disney and that, because their logos are on the website that clearly states that they have an affiliation with them. But now I come to find out that they don't, and they misrepresented, and now I need to file a complaint, for example, right? That's what we're trying to avoid and protect, both for the company's purpose, that being the school's purpose, and then also the students as well. So that's why we're asking these questions and getting into some of these compliance areas, because it can get a little sticky. And unfortunately, ignorance in this case is not, doesn't excuse the ultimately the misrepresentation that can occur, or living outside of what the statutes state from that standpoint.
Yes, sir. Understood there, and I appreciate all the thoroughness here and the details. It's definitely helping me to understand the scenario a lot more clearly, so I definitely appreciate everything. And I wanted to make one more comment too, because you mentioned the investment emails. So we, as part of our fundraise effort in 2022 and our initial forecast, we were initiating a crowdfunding race, and that didn't work out. So we ended up shutting that down, and no one who has invested still has money invested. It's all been returned if there were any investments. But yeah, so that's what that was about. If that's a problem in anything, we're not going to be doing crowdfunding campaigns in the future, but I'll definitely make sure that our team understands if that's an issue, didn't solicit any investments from students, if that is a problem. But our fundraise too, that we're trying to do here coming this year, is going to be a more traditional raise, planned through, venture capital. And so it won't include any of that. We won't be trying to solicit anybody that will restrict our crowdfunding fundraising. So I just wanted to clarify on that.
Well, certainly a couple things. And I think we've kind of stated this a few times. One, our intent is not to provide you legal advice or guidance or counsel of how you need to operate your business or the crowdsourcing or funding of that nature. Our expectation is that when you filled out the application and received the approval for licensure, that at that time you accepted to live within the statutes and requirements associated with that licensure. And it is on your requirement to ensure that you understand that thoroughly and can live within that. And when you step outside of that, statements of, well, we didn't know, we know that now, so we won't do it again, those are not acceptable statements. And that's why we highly encourage that schools do have some type of compliance oversight of people who are knowledgeable to avoid what could be considered catastrophic failure from an institution that you wouldn't have even expected. I'm going to pause here to see if there are any other questions from my fellow board members. Ms. Cardullo.
Hey, I can continue. I just had another question about the website and the advertising. So I did notice, I refreshed my screen, I did notice that all the things about salaries have now been documented or referenced, which I appreciate. Thank you for that. There still is an area that could be misleading, and that's around student success stories. One area, it says you get a high-paying job. Two others say they doubled their salary or they got a near six-figure. The FTC is really wanting to make sure we aren't misrepresenting or implying that that's a typical outcome, but maybe you'll tell me that is a typical outcome. Is that normal for grads to double their outcome, to double their income?
And yes, ma'am, because a lot of students, they're already at a low income around, you know, 40K or so. And so as you get into the field of IT, you're usually going to start around 50, 60, 70, 80 range. So that's not an abnormal thing for folks to have a double of their income.
And is it true that you have 50,000 students? It's 50,000 students have taken?
Yes, ma'am. So that's just all students who have ever enrolled and who are ever in the platform. And honestly, Ms. Susan, I just was looking at that yesterday, and this is something I wanted to ask the team. That number comes from just the fact that we have built our own learning platform, and that's basically all the people, approximate number of the amount of people who are in there for various reasons. Those are not all students who are part of any paid program.
Yeah, that I thought that was a little misleading. It made me think of ASU or something when I saw 50,000. But
right.
Okay. The only other thing I was going to say about the website, it says available in person or online, but it's no longer anywhere in person, right?
That is correct, ma'am. If that's somewhere still,
so that needs to change. And then it says more than 50% is hands-on. I wondered how you do more than 50% hands-on if it's all online.
So the way our program works is it's based around a real-world skills model. So all those students are working online. The projects and everything they do is on their computer. And so the skills that they're working with are all on the computer.
That's a good point. That is hands-on. Hands on your computer. I gotcha. Okay.
Yes, ma'am. That's, and they're doing planning, designing. They're doing project design. They're doing configuration. They're doing all kinds of things. But it's
on the computer. Thank you. That's fair.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Any questions? Out of curiosity, and listen, we're not trying to forensic people going to your website by any means. I do wonder, originally on the front page, you have the Bureau of Labor Statistics for salary information, and then further in the frequently asked questions, you move to a company PayScale to that essentially calls out salaries as well. I just wasn't sure if there was a reason why you're bouncing back and forth between what could be considered at least an established source of information versus I'm not familiar, but maybe PayScale is a very accepted location with validated information.
Yes, sir, that is correct, and we used to base most of our information on that. But since we moved to the Bureau of Labor and Statistics, that was updated on our front page. I'm not sure if people just didn't notice and wanted to use that same information elsewhere in the FAQ. So I will definitely make that known to my team to see if that makes sense for us to update. However, yes, that is a credible source.
Okay. Those are some of the things that, you know, having that compliance oversight to, because you sometimes see it in one area and don't realize how it matriculates through in all types of other areas, possibly in your catalogs, possibly in your social media accounts and so on and so forth, that you've nipped it in one place, but it lives in a multitude of other places. So I would, just based on our current discussion right now, I'd like to make a motion right now to go into executive session for legal counsel. So I'll make that motion and see if I have a second.
This is Susan. I can second that motion.
Thank you, Ms. Cardew.
I have to add a room. Give me a minute or so.
Not trying to create alarm with the audience by any means. This is just normally when we have to take a moment and just validate a couple things that we wouldn't necessarily discuss outside here. So we appreciate your patience as Mr. LaMountain sets up that room, and we'll go into that and then come right back out.
Thank you, Mr. LaMountain.
All right, we'll give everyone just another moment to come back in. I don't see Mr. LaMountain yet.
I'm on.
All right, very good. There you are. Can you just, can we validate that all parties, board members, are at least back and perfect?
So it's Doug, Jennifer. Mike.
And I think, Mr. Wallace, are you on? Mr. Wallace was in the executive session, so he may be still attempting to get back in. So, but we do have a quorum.
Okay, very good. Thank you. And thank you, everyone, for your patience. We just wanted to have some seek that legal counsel as the purpose for going into the executive session. As we continue on here, Mr. Hess and Mr. Tyre, I appreciate your candidness. I realize that there's been some organizational changes, obviously a lot of changes that have occurred, and certainly a lot of back and forth with the staff. I wanted to at least give the staff the opportunity, if they wanted to provide more color in regards to the response associated with making changes, the follow-ups, and the level of effort that's had to go into trying to ensure that the school is maintaining compliance. So, Mr. LaMountain, would you or Mr. Blanchard have anything additional you'd like to add?
I can open it up to Keith as well, but in terms of responsiveness, it has the communication between the institution and staff has been better in the last month since Mr. Hess has taken over. There's still, obviously, as we can see, a lag in discussion of what happens on that website and materials and the speed at which it gets done. And it is also, a challenge for staff to continue to go back and review constantly what is happening on that particular website and the page and the marketing materials. So it has improved. It is great at this point.
Mr. Blanchard, would you like to add anything additional?
No, thank you.
Okay. All right. Mr. Hess, Mr. Tarr, so you're aware it is within our ability to apply penalties when you fall out of compliance. And there's certainly areas here that have been identified both against R-439-304 of advertising and R-439-305 of recruitment in the rules that, again, you've agreed to from a licensure standpoint, that we could technically apply penalties for. I think where I'll be challenged today, just being very candid, is to call out which ones specifically at this time that are still outstanding to really reference and apply a penalty to, because we try and be consistent and equitable in those particular areas. But I want you to at least appreciate what we have the ability to do and how serious that is for you as we move forward. Our concern is that level of compliance and oversight to live within the licensure agreement that you've again agreed to could be questionable right now as we move forward. We also, again, going back, recognize, you know, Mr. Hess stepping into this role and understanding the severity of what we're talking through. At this point, I'd like to make a motion. Oh, before I do make that motion, Mr. LaMountain, can you validate what the surety bond should actually be given the information that the school has provided around Arizona students? If we need to consider what was originally agreed upon at that $121,000 amount, should that be adjusted as a result? If you could just confirm that.
Sure. So, Mr. Romano, members of the board, the current gross tuition rate for the institution itself, and keeping in mind it's an Arizona-based institution, so the current GTR is $1,123,604. And if we applied the same logic that we did last year, it would be 10% of GTR, which that bond would be $112,360. I don't have at this point the calculation of the 26 students, and it wouldn't just be the 26 students, it would be the gross tuition for last year of all Arizona students. If that's the direction that you wanted to go, then I don't have what that calculation is, because that it wasn't broken down by that.
I do have that now, actually, Mr. LaMountain, if you'd like for me to share that with you.
Well, I mean, that could be, let me just make it clear, that could be a consideration. Initially, we went off of GTR because the institution, if you recall, was actually in business operating in, I believe, the state of Texas prior to, which is how we found and got them to a point where they were required licensure in Arizona. So they had already had revenue prior, and then they've had it over the last few years, a fairly substantial amount. So it would be a board decision. Do you want to do the 10% GTR off of? Board discretion is always board discretion for the bot. It can be 10%, could be more, could be less, could be of Arizona students, it could be of all. The protection for the bond.
I don't think there's any reason to verify. Sorry, I don't think there's any reason to verify from what we normally do here. So I think that's where I was trying to get clarity. So right now I have the current GTR, at least what was provided in kind of the board consolidation notes, as $1,123,604. It, traditionally, that is what we would use for the 10%, getting us to the $112,360.40 surety bond, or the $112,360, let's just say, from that standpoint. So I just wanted to confirm that being consistent, and given the fact that they operate here in Arizona, although they only may have Arizona students, it kind of becomes all-encompassing from that standpoint to be consistent.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you for that. All right. Okay. Appreciate everybody's patience in this. I'll go ahead and make a motion at this point in time that we, at this point approve the conditional to regular non-accredited vocational license application with the stipulation of a $112,306 surety bond to be maintained from that standpoint. And I'm going to add to that, and that we review in 3 months through the board staff the marketing advertising side to ensure compliance of the institution. And if we need to address anything, we can do so at that time. Anything outstanding?
And I want to, I believe, Mr. Romano, I believe I heard you say $112,306. I believe it's $112,360 bond, just for a point of clarification.
And well, give me 1 second here, because I thought I was using... yes, I'm sorry. That is correct. It is a, so I'll amend very quickly the $112,360. My apologies for that bond.
This is Susan. I can make a second to that as amended.
Okay. Institution, Mr. Hess, do you agree, to support that surety bond of the $112,360?
Yes, sir, we'll do what we can. We're actually in a position right now that's gonna be hard for us to be able to pay that directly. So we will need to figure out a way to make that payment. And also our GTR was a little bit different after recalculating it. So we'll need to send you what the new GTR was. It was a little higher. So those are my comments.
And Mr. Romano, members of the board, Mr. Hess, you do have, so you can reduce that by 15,000 because you do have a $15,000 cash deposit with the Arizona treasurer. So that number would be $15,000 less.
Yeah. And just to clarify, Mr. Hess is talking about a adding to our cash payment is what we consider to be difficult. A surety bond is you know, $1,200 to $1,500 a month, which is not an issue.
Right. So if So if again, if you go through the surety bonding company and whatever you arrangements that you make, that's fine. And then keeping in mind that you have the $15,000 cash, and you can also request that money back if you prefer. It could be refunded, then you would give us a surety bond for the entire amount.
Right. Okay. Thank you for that clarification. Mr. Romano, I believe you're muted again there.
Sorry about that. With that information, does the school now agree?
Yes, sir. The school now agrees.
Okay. All right. Any further discussion by the board members? Mr. LaMountain, if you would take roll call.
Dr. Leck.
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano.
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace.
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Ms. Cardula.
Aye.
Ms. Cardula votes aye. By your vote of 5 ayes, 1 absent, the motion passes.
Very good. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Hess, Mr. Tarr. We appreciate your time. Please do take this and continue to work with our staff. We realize it sounds like you've been through some changes over this past year, but you now have a direction in which you intend on staying in Arizona, continuing to drive the online school. And it looks like we'll continue to be seeing each other here frequently. And so we look forward to that partnership as we move forward. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Romano. Thank you, board. We really appreciate your consideration. And just as a last comment, yes, I do see the importance of everything. There's much respect to everything you guys are doing. And all my intention is to make sure we're fully compliant and have a great relationship with the board.
Thank you for that, Mr. Hess. Have a wonderful rest of your day. To you, Mr. Tarr.
Yes. All right. Thank you, guys.
We will move on to our last school under new applications, that being Code Steel Academy. Mr. Wallace is our board lead, and Mr. LaMountain, would you like to provide any updates on the school prior to Mr. Wallace engaging?
The only update would be if you recall from our last meeting in January, we really did go through a very detailed look and deep dive into the institution's information. And the only question at that point in time was the financials, which we've been provided an updated set of financials that you are all have in your board pack. So I just wanted to make it clear up front that we have been through the entire application with them prior. And that's it.
Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Mr. Wallace, you are on. Please take it away.
Yeah, I apologize for appearing to be AWOL. I would listen to everything. Does Coach Steele have any opening comments they'd like to make at this time?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Wallace and members of the board and staff. I'm Tom Cuby, one of the Code Steel Academy's board members, and with me today are Jeremy and Marie Fuller, who are also serving on our board. And as a reminder, we are a 501c3 institution, and as Mr. LaMountain said, you did move us to this meeting last month after review pending our financials being upgraded and the fire safety inspection were the two main items, and we've certainly provided that. Since the last meeting, our financials have improved. We've worked significantly on contributions and donations that's provided in the update that you have for this meeting. I will point out that in the P&L statement we gave, I apologize, we did rush that to get it to Mr. LaMountain to make the deadline. The total column doesn't foot properly, and I did try and send him one this morning that does foot properly, but the numbers have not changed except the totals column. Where we've improved again with our financial and philanthropy work is that we do now have a grant of $10,000 to engage a consultant. That consultant is paid by the Vitalist Foundation to engage us, the board, in our planned giving and fundraising activities. And we've started that in December, and that goes through May of this year. Our work with that consultant to build our financing and plan giving activities. And we've had that significantly changed in the last month's time. So I think we're hopeful that we've satisfied your concerns and are here today to hopefully ensure that we have and move forward. So thank you.
Okay, I've had a chance to look at, go ahead, sorry.
I'm done, thank you.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I had a chance to look at your last minute document that was presented, that was sent to us. As I understand, you're in the business of educating people in welding and fabrication.
Yes, and non-destructive testing are two main.
Okay, that ultrasound stuff I saw.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. You don't have any instructors on staff right now, or do you have them on staff?
We have two instructors that we've hired, and we have trained two others earlier this month. It would start the NDT instructor is our lead instructor. He's building the capacity for the program, and our welding senior instructor is doing the same thing for welding. And then the two other instructors that we have trained that haven't started yet are in the NDT area. But not instructor testing.
Oh, I see. Okay. I looked at your balance sheet as of January 16th. I know that's changed since then probably, but that your everything on that January 16th statement, you're standing behind at this point?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And the Google SEO grant. Tell us about that if you would, please.
Okay, as a 501c3, Google has programs for eligible nonprofits to grant them $10,000 a month for up to 12 months for 1 year to do search engine optimization. And we have been given that grant. We started that in January, So for the next 12 months, we will be able to spend $10,000 on Google Ads and search engine optimization through our web company at no additional cost to us. So it's essentially free money that Google is giving us to grow the school.
Okay. Let's talk about the marketplace. I'm looking at your projections and so forth, and they show a nice return on revenues and things like that. But that's an awful lot of students. Why do you think you're going to get so many students so quickly?
Well, the pro forma that you have through the first quarter, we're planning on 5 students for each monthly start for February and March. And then for our NDT certificates, we're planning for 20 students in each of February and March. So we're trying to start as very conservatively. Right now, we're only offering certification courses that are under the board's 40-hour and $1,000 thresholds. So those are not required to be licensed, but we are moving ahead so we can be licensed with the longer courses that we certainly want to offer and build capacity on. So right now, we're being very conservative, and we plan to keep it that way.
Okay. What is the marketplace for your students? What kind of research can you share with the board about the marketplace for your students?
Well, I believe we did provide that in our application, but the market is very strong for welding, welders. We will actually have 2 programs, a basic and an advanced welding program that we've submitted with our application. And the interest in non-destructive testing, we would be one of very few schools in Arizona that teaches non-destructive testing, allowing for companies that utilize those skills to come to us instead of traveling to places like Houston and Dallas and so forth and spending money, travel and room and board to get their staff trained in those non-destructive testing skills.
Okay, very good. Do my other board members have questions of the school?
No, as I recall, I'll jump in here really quickly. You know, we did go through, to Mr. Lamont's point, pretty thorough discussion last time. I think, you know, one of the elements that I did bring up was just in regards to the resumes that were provided for the potential instructors, that they weren't necessarily matching what was on the website. It doesn't look as though the finals have been updated to reflect that. It's not, at this point, not a requirement. I think it sounded like your instructors have great skill sets and background to promote, and I just want to make sure that you were validating that and calling that out. I'll leave it at that.
If I could respond, Mr. Romano, we actually did update those forms. We can provide them. What I think one of the issues was, our instructors were using a lot of acronyms for their training backgrounds. We've updated those to show what the training acronyms actually stand for. And you raised a question that we didn't respond to last time about a trained drone operator, where drones are actually very commonly used now in non-destructive testing, particularly for large tanks, water tanks and fuel tanks and things like that. So that is part of our curriculum, is the drone aspect of the training.
Completely understand from a non-destructive testing standpoint, different products that you would evaluate. I'm sure you could appreciate from a board perspective, just calling out Drone Academy would probably just lead you to believe an operator of a drone versus some type of manufacturer or testing engineer of that, because it really wasn't specified out. And in fact, this major study is a remote pilot licensure that he received from the Drone Pro Academy. So again, it's just an opportunity that if people are delivering the education, they actually have the background and experience to be able to educate the students versus, hey, I was a pilot of a drone, and now I'll tell you how to properly do non-destructive testing. I think we can all appreciate the differences associated with that. That's all.
Absolutely, and that was totally on us, and we should have clarified that at the time, so we apologize.
Yeah, no worries. Like I said, it sounds like your staff has some really good experiences that will benefit, people who are interested in this education. just want to make sure we promote it properly. That's all.
Great.
Yeah. Great. That is it for me, Mr. Wallace. I don't know if any other board members have any questions.
Well, I'd like to make a motion. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry, because I'd like to make a motion to approve a conditional non-accredited vocational program license for Code Steel, subject to a $15,000 bond.
And we do have the bond in place now.
And okay.
That is in your possession there.
I'll go ahead and second. Mike Romano. Sounds like the school's already agreed to the surety bond, so we've got that taken care of. Any further discussion by the board? All right, hearing none, Mr. Lamont, would you take roll?
Dr. Leck.
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano.
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace.
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Ms. Cardullo.
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By your vote, five ayes, one absent, the motion passes.
Very good. Congratulations.
Thank you.
We're very excited. We'll be back in front of you in another year with even more good news.
We look forward to that. Best of luck out there and go educate some students. All right. We will move on to our call to public. This is the public input is encouraged. Presentation should be limited to 5 minutes. Please be aware, however, that the committee cannot discuss, consider, or take action at this meeting on any item not scheduled on the agenda. During the meeting, additional public comment may be requested, but is generally not allowed. If you have interest as the general public, you can raise your hand and Mr. Lamont will call on you accordingly.
Someone up in the box is Mr. Unknown, although I'm pretty sure we all know who Mr. Unknown is. So, Fred.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, thank you. I just want to wish everyone a happy new year and say thank you guys for the work that you do. Sitting through this one yet again after 26 years of it, I swear it is still mind-blowing what folks don't know about the process. And of course, the Arizona Private School Association, we're willing to help them. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Lockhart. We appreciate that and all that you do for the community as well. Any others? All right, hearing none, I will, because it doesn't require a motion, officially adjourn our meeting at 12:41 p.m. this afternoon. Thank you very much, everyone, for your attendance today and participation.
Thank you.
Wonderful rest of your day.
Great job. You.